Good morning. Today is Tuesday, November the 10th.
Birthday of the Marines.
245 years, I understand.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you guys doing talking before I came in?
No. I read it in the paper or something this morning.
Oh, way to go.
Yeah.
Glad to see you reading.
Well, you know, I'm not a big reader, but I'm learning.
I would
It's the longer words that get me, yeah. The multi-syllable words.
Yeah, it's those foreign words that get me.
Yeah.
All right.
If I sound him out, I get through.
Mr. Foster is with us this morning.
Good
Winston,
morning.
What do you have as our, why do we say that?
He obviously listened to me earlier this morning because that was the first thing I did in this day in history was.
Of course, that's
1775.
Yeah,
missed that cue, didn't you?
Yeah.
Where did a traitor get the name Copperhead?
A copperhead. I didn't know a traitor got the name of Copperhead. I have to say, is it related to the snake? And it was something that will strike and attack you?
Yeah, I was thinking snake.
You're fairly close.
I was thinking snake, not the metal.
Yeah.
In the northern states during the Civil War, copperhead snakes are as poisonous as rattlers but give no warning. So during the Civil War, northern friends of the Confederate states were known as copperheads because they often struck without warning.
Do I get the point?
I think you get half a sandwich on that one.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I was doing well there for a while. I got a number of them, and then I had a real cold streak. So yeah. Maybe I'm getting back on my game now.
Our scoring ledger here is not points,
exactly.
It's sandwich size.
So there you go. Perfect.
As Drew Carey said in Whose Line, if you're keeping score at home, I pity you.
Yeah, exactly.
Boy. So what are you hearing out there? Airplanes starting to fly a little bit more?
Yeah, you know, in fact, we have something before the Board of Supervisors this morning to do our next big market analysis, and we'll be looking at 2019 as our year. And way that works is you look at travel patterns and all that in the local area, and then we use that for our service proposals. But we have a lot less capacity, right? Fewer planes, fewer seats.
Right.
But our traffic is up over 3,000 or so passengers a month, which is down obviously quite a bit from where we were. We were doing anywhere from 6,000 to 9,000, or even, you know.
But 50% has got to be outpacing.
We are doing
the national,
absolutely. And in fact, we get the data each month, and we kind of analyze it. And I've talked about on the show before the load factor, which is there's a more complicated formula, but basically it's how many seats are sold, right? And
occupancy rate,
right?
Kind of,
yeah,
basically.
It's ASMs divided by available seat miles and revenue seat miles. But anyway, those numbers are, you know, quite honestly, they're 20 years ago or so were good. Were considered good numbers. It used to be that the airlines wanted 65, 70, 75, even 50s. Would work. And then, you know, as the industry became more competitive, they wound up in the 80s and 90s. Last month, all three of our services, and I'll tell you why I said three, did well in the 60s.
You mean
or
service,
even higher.
You mean flight.
Well, right. So,
times. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Interestingly, United ran 9 departures to Denver last month, just on the weekends.
Let me guess. They all were sold out.
They did very well. They were in the 80,
that is the magic
plus.
Route. It's
yeah.
not San Francisco.
Yeah.
It's Denver.
Right. Well, you know, it's such a better connection going east. And so even that little...
Well, may even be going west, too.
Well,
I mean, who knows?
Exactly. Yeah. So that was kind of encouraging. And, of course, some of that is people booking flights Midwest, you know, elsewhere. They're connecting, and United routed them through there rather than San Francisco. But... and then LA continues to perform decently, pretty much, if not completely, gone to the larger jets now, the 76 seaters or 70. We're doing pretty well. We had an interesting conversation as well with our contact at United. And basically the conversation was, you know, three parts. What's going on right now?
They asking you, or are you asking them?
Both. You know, it's
okay.
Like, what's going on? What do you see? And then they ask, what do you see? Because they want, we really are their eyes in the market. You know, they know what's going through the on the planes, but they'd like to know what we see in terms of business and all of that, quite honestly.
Oh, so it's like a market update.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the second part of the question, of course, is what's happening in the short term? And they can kind of answer that. And then we say what's happening in the long term? Well, they can't really answer that as well. But they did say this, which was encouraging and inspired a lot of follow-up, which was they're economists and they're, you know, futurists or whatever they use. Those guys that, you know, really try to look at the demographic and economic trends are saying that they should be looking at investing more in smaller markets. And
now, I've heard that from a couple of different folks because of the migration, I guess would be a
That's
good
exactly
term.
Exactly it.
That it's the, what was it, 4 hours to 4.5 hours away from the metropolitan centers.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be like the Reddings and the Eurekas
and exactly.
maybe the Medfords down out of Portland.
Yep.
That those are the places that they're seeing more demand, more interest.
Right.
And it just is a cultural shift that's going on right now.
Yeah. So, you know, which the COVID pandemic, I think, you know, accelerated, but I don't know that it's just a faster trend than where it was before. And here's why, I think that, and there's some data to this, is that, you can look at the cost of living, the cost of office space, and the sort of satisfaction in some of these bigger urban areas, which grew fantastically over the last, 10 years. And you can see it's too expensive to live, it's too expensive to rent an office, and people are very dissatisfied. Well, that indicates that something is going to have to change, right? And so I think that COVID accelerated that, if for no other reason than it forced these companies to allow people to work remotely. And they say, oh, we can do this.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster. Greg, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the back and forth conversations with the airline folks.
Yeah.
And you had indicated their demographers and their trend folks are looking at the, maybe not a migration, that might be too strong of a term, but certainly the change out of metropolitan areas now with the recognition that perhaps you don't have to live in the metropolitan areas. I would think of Santa Rosa could be teed up just for an explosive growth because they're already there.
Right.
For us, it's a little bit different because we don't have that housing stock. We don't have the roads to be able to accommodate. I mean, if we added, oh my, 10,000 people.
Right.
Yeah, everybody would be talking about gridlock and Broadway would hardly be moving and we'd have Caltrans out trying to figure out how to go left or right, on half the roads in our area. But I suspect, and I don't know, this was Dad, this was Grandpa also, that it's coming. It's going to happen, and it's going to happen shortly.
Whether
the anti-growers want it or not, it's coming. And we're starting to see that a little bit with the housing starts, a little bit with the homes being flipped and fixed up, the ones that have been ignored for years.
Yep.
All those outward signs are there bubbling. Is there anything other than intuition that says we're on the cusp of something?
A little bit more than intuition, but maybe not much more. We did have a presentation. There's a group that I facilitate that meets on Zoom every week, three times a week.
Can't you wait for that to stop?
Yeah.
Just have regular meetings?
Although, there is a certain...
Efficiency. No, bull. You have more meetings, more, and they last longer because everybody thinks that shorter. They're saving time because they don't have to commute. Now we can fill it in with something else.
Oh, no. Well, see, not my meetings because I facilitate them pretty heavily. So I was like, okay, we're done. You know, don't forget that.
I know how you talk, man. You can't pull that card.
Yeah, no. I swear to God, I do. But the person that controls the Zoom also has the mute button. So you don't have to tell someone to be quiet. You can just mute them and then go, oh, I don't know. I guess there must have been a technical glitch. So we had a presentation on one of those meetings from Victoria Copeland, who's a local realtor. And she was talking about they had done a survey and – I can't remember the total number of units that had sold, but about a third were being sold to people from out of the area.
That's a pretty significant number.
I thought so. You know, and again, I don't know how that translates historically, you know, but we also see a low inventory, but a pretty quick churn. So time on market's been really
three to five days. Yeah, it's almost standard.
Exactly.
It's really interesting.
Very quick. And so that certainly indicates something's going on, right? And, you know, who those people are, why they're moving here, where they're from, if they are, you know, moving here from somewhere else, is not data that we have really, you know, a handle on right now. It'd be kind of cool if we could actually go out and do a survey of all these new property owners and say,
okay. Don't they have that information?
Some, but, you know, you know where they're from. But you don't know necessarily. I mean,
we don't keep contact information.
Yeah. Well, you know, why did you come here? What was part of your decision making? You know, what is the thing that brought you here? Where, you know,
would the Board of Realtors be willing to do?
Well, and that's, you know, we talk about that. Yeah, let's survey people who just bought homes and say, you know, let's find out what's going on, because I think that's really interesting.
Why here?
And you know, to the earlier point about, you know, Sacramento's, you know, seeing a boom. Some of these other places. And, you know, take, for example, Twitter. We had a big, you know, office presence in downtown San Francisco and very expensive, right? And, you know, I assume some of these companies make money and some of these companies don't, but they all spend a lot of money regardless. And, you know, you can see the conversation happening. You would hope at some point, even without the whole COVID thing about, is it really worth it to us to spend so much money to bring people into this office building, and at the same time they have to live proximate to the office building, or, you know, enough to get there every day, and the housing prices are outrageous. So how long is that sustainable, right? Because it kills your wage structure and your office cost. And so, you know, I know there's the people in there going, this can't, we got to think of something, right? But inertia is hard to overcome in business.
You're having a Beverly or a Rodeo Drive address.
Right.
Scores points with certain people.
Right.
The trade-off of that.
Right. Well, and there's a lot of companies where that address doesn't matter. So, like, for example, you know, Google, no one cares.
If they're on Battery Street, who cares?
Right. Or, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Sorry, you know, reference.
Yeah. I think they had to be looking at that. And there was, I mean, it's not that I'm guessing that. There was obviously a discussion in the trades and, you know, out in the, about, you know, is this model sustainable? Well, then here comes COVID, you know, and it's like, boom, guess what? Everybody has to work from home. So it was a shock to the system and one that was painful, but I think one that was like, oh, okay, we're forced now to make the decision that we've been contemplating for a while. And that's true for large businesses and small, you know, even people that work out of their own homes. It's like, you know, and add on top of that fires.
Right. But now it's acceptable, where before it wasn't.
Right.
Oh, there's not enough cash flow for you to be able to have a freestanding front.
Right.
You have to be in your bedroom.
Right.
Huh? I'll go find somebody else. Not the case anymore.
Now we're all there.
It's 8:30.
Hi, my My name is Keith Lund. I am an electrician for Owsley Electric. You can go into a trade, be 18, become a trainee. They do require some education. You have 120 hours of classroom education, plus you have to work 2,000 hours a year. So after 4 years, then you can go out and work for another company, getting your own certificate, become your own boss. There's quite a few options you can do.
Own your future and learn more about the Trades Academy at hcoe.org.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster from REDEC, one of the sponsors of the show, along with Murphy's Market, Baywood Golf and Country Club, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and CDH Painting. So, Greg, as you look long term, yeah, I know you like playing with numbers and dorking around with that stuff and this is and that's. Are we poised for something that's really going to be significant? Yeah, we've got the fiber optic line.
Right.
We're seeing the real estate surge going on again. New housing starts are being taken out. We're seeing all of these signs.
The Nordic Agriculture Project.
Yeah, those guys hit and a couple of other things, and then you get, you know, maybe Humboldt's attendance back up to normal.
Right.
And it would seem like we're seeing things here, but are we?
You know, I think we are, and you know, it's kind of exciting. In fact, when I was talking to United Airlines, they were saying, "Send us all that information." You know, we know our side of the biz, but we don't know your community as well as you know. And so they're like, we talked to them about Nordic, we talked about the fiber line, we talked about all this other stuff, So I think. There is something going on here that's good, and the county and others are working really hard. And there's other proposals. I mean, REDEC, and we'll probably announce it, I hope, when we close the deal.
In the next minute or two?
Probably in a few weeks when we close the deal. But we just financed with our friends at Redwood Capital Bank and Arcata Economic Development Corporation. So we all work together to do a financing for a pretty major expansion for a local manufacturer. You know, we're seeing more and more of that, and that's great. In fact, we have the conversation now, and we've been talking to our friends in Mendocino and Del Norte about how to accommodate this growth. So, you know, we talk about the businesses that are investing in the fiber and the Nordic and all that. But then going back to our earlier conversation, people who are working remotely or bringing their small business or consulting or service-oriented firm with them, how are we doing with those folks and are we prepared? And so, you know.
And are we retaining those that are here?
Right. And for the most part, I think we do. We have some advantages. We have decent broadband service and we have decent flight service, and that's why we work so hard on trying to really push that, because we have to be, we're remote but not isolated, right? And we can't isolate ourselves from the rest of the world, certainly on the commerce side, and so we're seeing a lot of growth in that, and even our food products businesses, some of the exports that we're making. I mean, I was talking to another manufacturer that's based in Arcata that sells a product. It's not a food product, but I was talking to their owner, and they're having the best year ever.
Guilt-laced.
Huh?
I mean, you know, the guys right. that are doing well, they always kind of say it under their breath, and because they're
They're
recognizing what's going on in the neighborhood.
Right, and this is a company that's been around for a while and really worked hard and is, sells maybe, 2% of their product in Humboldt County, And it's not cannabis related, but even that industry is doing pretty well. You know, they have the problem that they can't export across state lines, but...
I was going to ask you about that. Miles was in on Friday. And I was lamenting the Arthur Johnson's location. you okay? Right, the number one retail store spot. And very little hesitation. That was okay. And I'm thinking, Then we got home. I was kind of, I mean, that obviously I'm chewing on it a little bit. We wouldn't allow three liquor stores within a block and a half of one another, and yet we allowed the marijuana industry to have retailers that tight.
Mm.
Is there a double standard, or is there desperation? Anything is okay, and wherever it is, and the zoning ordinances may not be applicable, or we try to redefine this guy a little narrowly. Right. Wait a minute. There are four within a block and a half. Sorry, missed one. It seems like there's an exception being made, and I'm wondering, just as we were so heavy in the timber industry for those years, that was certainly sustainable. The marijuana industry, who knows how sustainable it is, but if that's where all the eggs are being put
right.
in our basket, does that make sense?
Right, right. Well, you know, we're probably over-retailed, you know, So my hunch is there'll be a shake out there. Because, you know, how many can we actually sustain?
Unless everybody's making money, and I don't know if right. everybody is making money.
Well, and I don't know either, quite honestly.
Yeah.
Where I think there's a lot of growth still, especially if the federal government, you know, changes its rules and we can do interstate commerce, is the product manufacturing, which...
But then you don't have to be here. You just get the product, kind of like the wine industry, right? You buy it, and then you process it wherever makes most sense for you.
There is that, but sometimes it's good to have the head start, and so we have the head start. I mean, I think we have the brain trust here and some of the infrastructure that allows us to have the head start and the product in the market.
But would they stay here, or would they relocate to a more centrally located area?
I think both.
For distribution?
I think both. Yeah, I think both. I mean, we have a lot of food companies here that do pretty well selling their stuff, and there's really no reason for them to be here except
right.
the owner likes it here, right? And this is where they've set it. It's hard to pick up and move, right? And especially if you have a lot of talent connected to your – and I don't know if you've ever toured a cannabis manufacturing facility, but it is amazingly clean and high-tech.
To pick up and go, it's would be,
you know,
an issue. There would have to be savings.
Plus, there is a marketing cachet around being in Humboldt still.
Now, when their stuff goes out, is it labeled Humboldt County, California, or is it Arcata or Eureka or Fortuna?
You know, and there's some work around
that kinda
this.
Defeats that.
Right. It's Humboldt. You know, a lot of them kind of use the Humboldt. You know, they want a Humboldt. We're located in Humboldt County, California. And again, it depends on the product. So the products are so broad. There's the, you know, the products you right. use to get high, and there's the products that don't get you
the
high at all.
And the oils,
yeah,
and
right.
Stuff,
that's
yeah.
for pain relief and all that. And so we do both here, and so, you know, I think the county is moving forward on a marketing terroir kind of thing, and that tends
a
to
what.
Be, terroir, you know, it's a French
oh
word.
Man, we're gonna have to look that thing up during the break.
It's a French word talking about, you know, yeah. places of origin, like Champagne or Bordeaux.
Oh,
or that kind of
okay.
thing, right? And that tends to be, I think, more for the consumable, you know,
tequila,
recreational use, right? But you know, there's a whole marketing effort going on around that. So if it works, it works. You know, it's a brand that's known. Humboldt is known
right.
for trees and weed.
KINS. Man, you had to do that. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster. Greg, are we building a solid economic foundation for the next 25 years? I think that's one of the things that a lot of us are concerned about. One, you know, what we leave behind, but also what is the immediate future? I think, you know, the fish plant,
right.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. But then we don't have the ice plant on the other side. You know,
right,
that
right.
hasn't, you know. So we've got some growth in some areas, and we have, you know, the old mill sites.
Right, right.
And some of the commercial waterfront space is just kind of sitting there, not doing anything. it's this bipolar element of the community is kind of challenging.
You know, and it we have, you know, a fair amount of underutilized land and aging infrastructure that is the drag, a drag. And not just in the commercial, you know, in industrial development, but in housing too. And we were having a conversation the other day, and I was literally talking to a bunch of people about housing, and I had Google Maps on my other screen. And we were literally looking at what are the underutilized half blocks, quarter blocks, you know, in Eureka. And I like what Eureka has done with the parking lot, at least, you know, the people are quibbling about some stuff, but I think the concept was and is good, which is, you know, we're going to try to make more dense, higher, better use of these lots. But it was funny to go around and it's like, oh, there's an empty half block, or there's a half block that's got an abandoned house on it or something like that. And I said, well, what about this one? What about this one? And there were a couple that were like stuck in we did some research and they were stuck in some old bankruptcy or something. And it's like, well, why isn't, you know,
somebody
coming in? And here's what we need to do, I think, is, you know, when we see a property like that, that's a quarter block, half block, that might be good for a multifamily or something, you know, if we in the public sector or a combination of public and private can come in and make that investment and then sit back, you know, make the investment to get that place ready, developed like they did with these parking lots, and then put them out to bid, and then recoup our money or not, but at least be the patient money, you know, be the money that's going to be taking some of that early risk out of it to induce
risk.
A developer to come in, yeah. Right? Because you know, there's cost and there's time, right? And of course, time is money. And so when you're looking at trying to develop some of these things and you're like, I'm investing all this money over this long period of time with an uncertain outcome, I'm not going to do it. So we need to get over that hurdle.
Right. Well, don't get hurt trying to go over that hurdle.
Yeah, low hurdles for me.
Yeah. Give me a line on the floor. That's
exactly.
Enough. Thanks for coming by, bud.
All right,
see everybody tomorrow.